Okay, Quiet Soapbox. Marshall and Felicia and Jake's going to be in here a little bit. And we are really excited to have our Kauai Planning Director in here, Mike DeHelig. Are you mic'd up, Mike?
I'm mic'd up.
Mike's mic'd up. And then Marie Williams will be in here in just a moment. And we are basically going to be envisioning Kauai's future today. We'll be talking about the general plan update. I know that sounds like political jargon, but it is actually a really big deal. And so that's what we'll be looking at. And I do want to start the show off with a song to love and honor one of our founding contributors, one of the people who has every season, he is always supporting KKCR, and the reason that Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and we are heartbroken that Tom has transitioned out of this life yesterday. But Tom has a reason that he's really behind Kauai Community Radio. He's got a lot of people here on this island that love him very dearly, like his best friend and guitar player, Mike Campbell, and one of the founders of this station, Richard Fernandez, who's his road manager. And we got John and Scott Hardy and who do also road managing. A lot of his friends are here. And
do you ever see him live?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Where?
Nashville, Indianapolis, Seattle, a number of different places. He's very good. He's part of the soundtrack of my life. And now he's got a number of good friends and a lot of the station's good friends, like Jackson Brown tours with them. And I've got to be, you know, backstage or whatever else. And anyway, really good performer. And Tom and family, we love and appreciate you and how much you have done to help KKCR be here. And so we're going to play Wildflowers, and I'm not only dedicating this to Tom Petty, but also to the many other people who lost their lives yesterday in Las Vegas. These things happen, and it's tragic for everyone. So be safe, everybody, and we love you. Places always, there we go.
Somewhere you
follow Tom. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, one of our beloved KKCR founders and friends and funders. And we're sorry to have you transcend, but we will love you always. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store and Pono Pies.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Pono Pies, dedicated to restoring breadfruit as a major food crop in Hawaii. Gluten, dairy, and GMO-free. Delicious Pono Pies, available at health food stores throughout Hawaii. PonoPies.com, 808-283-3718.
KKCR's Fall Fun Drive will begin on November 2nd. Starting now, you are invited to make a tax-deductible donation to KKCR, which will automatically enter you into our Early Bird Drawing. The Early Bird Drawing winner will win a two-night stay at the majestic Hanalei Bay Resort in Princeville. Mahalo nui to the Hanalei Bay Resort for their generous donation to our Early Bird Drawing winner and for supporting Kauai Community Radio. KKCR is volunteer-driven and listener-supported. We depend on your support to stay on the air. Our goal for this drive is $60,000. Help us get there by making a sustaining or a one-time donation today. For more information on the Early Bird Drawing Prize and to donate securely online, visit kkcr.org or call us at 826-7774.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So, Mike and Marie, thank you for coming back into the studio.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you here, and I appreciate that you guys just drove up from town. And so, tomorrow morning at 10:30...
8:30.
Excuse me. Oh, my gosh. 10:04. Wednesday, 10:04, we are going to be meeting at 8:30 in the convention hall,
yep.
The War Memorial Convention Hall, which is different than normal where the county council meets because they want to be able to let a lot of people in. And even like the last meeting, it was overflow. And I have to say, I think it's really great that people are paying attention.
I agree.
It is.
Yeah, so it's really great. And we thank everybody in advance for coming. And we were just mentioning about Las Vegas. There's also Puerto Rico and Houston, Florida, all through the Caribbean, Mexico, all over the place. We're seeing natural disasters, and I think that Puerto Rico is a good launching point for our discussion because it's really disturbing to see what they're going through as an island community after they're in a string of other disasters. So the emergency relief is a little bit light, and it seems like there's maybe not enough political will to be helping them out, you know? I mean, but I remember after we had Hurricane Iniki, all our power poles were down. We went through a lot. And so what I want to just really give you guys a big shout-out on is that how sustainability and resilience is a core benchmark in Kauai plan update.
Well, thanks, Felicia. You know, we made a deliberate decision a few years ago when we were laying out the data documents for the plan, and we said, you know, we want to make an investment in providing the community the research and the data as it relates to climate change. I know that there are some people out there that still do not believe in climate change, and we respect that. You know, that's their truth.
Something's happening. Whatever the source, right. Something is happening. We can see that. I think that's undeniable.
And so for us, you know, we need to be ahead of the curve and provide the data as part of this planning process. And so that's why we deliberately, as one of our technical studies, hired the University of Hawaii and Sea Grant to actually take a look at, you know, what does it look like if we raise the sea level 1 foot or 3 feet? You know, you're seeing stuff that sometimes they're proposing up to 6 feet now, you know. We are in a very vulnerable situation, and I think if people have not been paying attention to the news, they should, when it comes to things like Puerto Rico, things like what's going on along the islands or right along Houston. You know, so this is real stuff. It's life or death. And we need to, you know, in my opinion as a planner, start really making serious decisions about managing our retreat back from the oceans. We've had it done before after the 46 and 60 tsunamis in Hilo. So this is nothing new for us. And we need to look at some of these approaches as to how we make investments in our infrastructure, make investments in, you know, our services, where we want to grow, and do we put people and our investment and place them at risk right next to our shorelines, or do we start saying, look, we've got to start moving inland?
Right. And key places are like Waimea, Kekaha, Kealia, Kapa'a, even kind of Poipu, a little
yep.
bit. And most of those places had been wetlands that have been drained over time or filled.
Right.
And so even without sea level rise, they aren't really meant to be above sea level.
They aren't. And, you know, you mentioned Hurricane Iniki earlier. This island has had to go through that and understands what storm surge can do. Storm surge is a real thing. And when you look at that leading wall in 92 coming ashore and wiping out, you know, the majority of that South Shore area, we should take heed and take that as a warning for us. Do we make the same folly that we made prior to 92? Or do we start really saying, you know, we need to figure out how to make our investment, our tax dollars count in areas that are not going to be wasted by a disaster like that.
Right. Yeah, and I'll also just mention in regards to everyone's review of the general plan update draft. And
maybe tell the listener who doesn't know what the general plan is, just tell them very briefly what is
yeah.
a general plan.
Yeah, well, the general plan is essentially, I think I like to describe it as a blueprint for the county in terms of how we want to grow and manage growth as well and what that looks like. And it describes what that growth should be. And, of course, it does this in general terms. This is a general plan, and it expresses that in the form of what we call a future land use map, and also in terms of in the text as well, in the actual written plan and the policies also. And it really comes down to what our vision is for the future. And the only way we can get to the point where we can work around a vision is through a very in-depth public process. And that's really what we've been focusing on for the past 2 years, going out to the community at large. And
3 years, really.
Yeah, three. And what we have to acknowledge is that we have a diversity of groups here on Kauai, and respecting that. And there are also many opinions as well. But what we tried to ascertain through our public process was, are there really kind of key goals that we can build this plan around? And we found that there were, that most everyone agrees that we need to be sustainable. We want to be a healthier place. We want to
Opportunity
for all on the social equity side. And this plan, of course, it's just entering the review process at our county council. And if people haven't already, I really encourage you to go to plankauai.com and download the plan. And it's going to take a few days or weeks even to read through it, but it's a really important plan, and we really want people to be informed when they participate in the process or submit their testimony to council.
You know, I just say it's not like dense reading either, actually. It's done really nicely with illustrations and colored in blocks, and it highlights various ideas. It's actually a really nice read.
Thank you.
And when I read it, I'm figuring you penned a lot of it, Marie, because as I read it, you can just tell that it is a loving, kind person who wrote it. For a policy document to have so much heartfelt warmth, And I can see, like, I've been showing up at these meetings for almost 3 years. I'm not at every single one, but I'm probably one of those very repeat customers that you have. And I see you're making efforts to adapt and what's there. And for the listener, this is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And in the studio with us, we're very happy to have Planning Director for Kauai, Mike DeHelig. And Marie, is your title planner? What is your title? Marie Williams.
I am a planner, but I also manage, I now manage our community planning program. And basically what our program does is we're responsible for the long-range plans that the county has, primarily the general plan, which has really been our focus for the past 3 years, and the community plans as well.
And so this is like how the government sets the course, and it's trying to tap all the different entities like the big landowners, the schools, the people, and say, what direction do we want to go in? What's important? And sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not. I will say what my take is on this, and you can please correct me. It's not easy because what people want is to retain the rural character of Kauai, and especially the cultural diversity, and particularly the Hawaiian community, I think is a very important, let's can't be Hawaii without Hawaiians. Good. And yet we are this jewel of an island in the middle of a global economy. So if we don't allow any building, then anything that's here, even a shack, can be worth $2 million if there is no new building. And so we have all those challenges. Am I giving it a pretty good, simple piece there?
Right. You know, and I think that's, you know, at the heart of the plan that Maria has helped to steer over the past 3 years is this notion of balance. And we've been very clear in our, you know, presentations to both the Planning Commission, the public, and now the council, that the Value Balancing Act within the plan recognizes all those competing things you just listed off, Felicia. You know, we are part of a global society, but we have a very unique identity that we want to protect. We do live in the United States, but there are people within our community that don't want to be under the U.S. flag. And that's perfectly fine, too.
And yeah, and I'm pretty close to that community. Yeah. And I will say there's a lot of listeners who are in that community because part of KKCR and Kekahu Foundation's mission statement is to provide access to the underserved voice,
yeah,
and to perpetuate the Hawaiian culture.
Right.
And there is this big awakening happening, and I know there'll be a number of people who are listening right now who are very aware and conscious of the displacement. And just to bring up one more event that happened this week, so it's not your guys' fault, but the Board and Land and Natural Resources have their meeting on the 30-meter telescope, and I watched that whole issue exhaustively. You could see it online. Thank you, Naleo Television, to see the contested court case hearing. And there was just an avalanche of testimony that displayed how the criteria of the Board and Land and Natural Resources is to protect and preserve that conservation area. It is not to create an industrial site up there. And so, you know, what we watched, and so there's a lot of heartbreak, so I'm just kind of bringing you into the heart space, that the hearings officer basically didn't put the finding of facts into the piece that went to the Board of Land and Natural Resources and just recommended a permit, which is what they did, and it's the same people who permitted it before. And the Supreme Court had said, hey, I watched that one too live, thank you, OEV Television, or Olelo, that they acknowledged that the government didn't go ahead with what was their criteria and their kuleana. And so when I've been hearing people get all nervous about what we have here, is that there's not a lot of teeth in this program. And so I think people have sometimes a weak sense of faith that a document, a policy document or a visioning document can be written, and then how does that actually bring itself into what is still the comprehensive zoning ordinances, right?
Right. And okay. And so, you know, just to elaborate a little further, there are four core values in the plan. And these are, the reason why we call them values is because we wanted to start at a basic premise where we believe everybody has some degree of consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And as Marie listed them, you know, there are things like sustainability, things like equity, things like health. And the fourth one, you know, deals with our uniqueness, which is the topic that we think encompasses a recognition that, you know, our native people define essentially a lot of the base values for which we are very thankful to live, you know, in this community. And so preserving that, perpetuating that, and finding out ways that we can within ultimately an American framework, because this is a document that is required by state law.
Right.
So, you know, we do have to be cognizant that the things that we include in the plan do have to align with things like our state and federal constitutions. What's beautiful about the state constitution is that there is a recognition of our native peoples and the rights that they do have. So we take very seriously in the plan things like our public trust duties. You know, I think we recognize that that is standing case law within our state, and how we treat our water has to be aligned with public trust. Same thing with our gathering rights.
So can you tell the listener what that means to be the public trust doctrine and the customary gathering rights?
Right. So, you know, for instance, the Pa'akai case, we'll go start with the gathering rights. We're very aware of our duty as a state agency.
That would be the SALT.
That would be the Kapa'akai case, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
It's an organization that essentially got sued the state and said, look, you know, you have an obligation as a state agency to ensure that my right to practice my cultural, you know, my culture needs to be preserved. And so we take that case and we say, look, you know, whether we're permitting or in the case of this document, we're saying, you know, we need to ensure that any ordinances or any actions that we move forward with have to at least provide that, you know, case law required consultation with our host culture to ensure that we are not infringing on people's ability to exercise their culture. And same thing with the public trust doctrine. You know, the public trust doctrine refers to how we treat our water. You know, what we say very clearly in the plan is that what we want to ensure is that water is evaluated pursuant to the public trust doctrine. And there are many uses that are prescribed by the court, like native uses, but also domestic uses also considered consistent with the public trust.
Go ahead.
And so, you know, those are the types of things that we, because this is such a high-level document, mm-hmm. what we say in the plan, and I know that there's that desire to want to have more teeth behind it, but what we're saying is, you know, these are part of the balancing elements that when you go through that checklist of evaluating, you know, whether an ordinance that is going to be proposed before the council is aligned with our values, these things are things we want to flag and say, hey, you know, make sure that it meets these criteria.
Thank you, County Planning Director Mike DeHelig and Planner Marie Williams. We've got a number of people are texting in and listening in. And by the way, listeners, at the top of the hour, after 5 o'clock, I'm going to be taking calls at 826-7771. We're bringing up water right now. A key piece that I see in the plan, I should pull out the page number, but nobody else is probably really looking at it. But I like how you have maps in here. Try and find that page. There's a good map of where the growth is intended to happen, and so it's looking at 47% growth in the Lihue area. And do you know which page I'm on?
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's some growth, quite a bit in.
It's on page 27 of the Planning Commission draft.
Okay.
And it is an infographic, and basically what it's doing is trying to, in a user-friendly way, show what the population allocations are over the next 20 years. And if people are interested in the source of this, it comes from a technical report that we did previous to launching the public process, our socioeconomic analysis and forecast, and that's available at plan.kauai.com as well. But yeah, you're absolutely right that the forecast does show and support that the Lihue Planning District would basically capture a lot of the growth of our island's future growth over the next 20 years.
And then East Kauai, I see, has got 13%, South Kauai 26%, Hanapepe LA 9%, Waimea Kekaha 4%, North Shore 2%, which I'm sure a lot of North Shore people would be happy with if they already have a home.
That's true.
If they don't have a home, they might go, oh, well, where does that mean that I'm going to go? But I'm curious. When I see 47% there, I know that there are, like, there's a lawsuit out. We've done a little bit on that, like on the water redirection from the North Fork of the Wailua, which has been an issue for 7 years on this show. Doesn't mean it hasn't been longer an issue, but that's a real hot issue. Does the water redirection as part of that to support this 47% growth in Lihue? Are we taking water from Wailua, Ahupua'a, to be able to promote the growth of Lihue?
I think that really is, to say that water isn't coming out of that North Fork is would not be a true statement, because it already is, right?
Yeah, and it is.
So you're looking at our existing infrastructure and what our surface water treatment plant in Lihue can accommodate, right? If we were to expand the surface water treatment plant, that has to be, you know, it has to go through the same permitting channels, has to still go through public trust analysis, still has to go through, you know, the type of permitting and consultation that is required by whatever process CWRM requires. So
that's Commission on Water Resource Management. It's a state agency under the Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Right. So, you know, what we are looking at when we say 47% growth is that we overall understand that there are drivers within our community that are increasing our population. Things like in-migration and things like natural growth.
Which means babies being born, more babies born than dying.
Exactly. And so with those two considerations in mind, we have to look at where we put them. And what we was very clear throughout our community process was people were not happy with the style and the pattern of growth that was going on around the islands, particularly things like gentleman estates, things like, you know, large McMansions along the shoreline. Mm. People were not happy with that. Mm-hmm. And so we deliberately asked, you know, the question to the community, if knowing and understanding these dynamics, do you want to grow tighter or taller? Or have the same type of land use pattern that you have right now. Lihue is our business center. And when we look at where a lot of the infrastructure investment by the state over the past, couple decades or so, like the widening of Kamoli'i Highway, surface water treatment plant, the airport, and these types of things, one thing that came to mind very clearly during the community process was the word traffic. Traffic, 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 traffic. Mm-hmm. And if we were to direct the growth that we know is happening one way or the other that was away from the large services, we would be exacerbating that. So this is again the balancing act that we're having to juggle, where we know that we have an element of growth that we have to, you know, direct somewhere. We have a desire to want to keep a certain, you know, character of our community. We have a desire to not want to exacerbate traffic. And then we also have the fiscal element to understand, okay, where should we put this growth or these homes or these, you know, these rental units? And what made a lot of sense was trying to keep a land use pattern that was tighter. So there's an analysis, you know, in the plan that is, we can look, I forget what page that's on, but it's in the land use section that talks about the options that were weighed, whether we have a directed growth pattern or not. So it's not to say that a discussion on whether water is or is not going to be available is not part of the discussion, but we are very aware that if things start marching down that path, there's going to have to be that discussion through our partner agencies on whether or not to grant these permits. And I think that's really the crux of where, you know, the plan's responsibilities start and stop.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. We have Planning Director Mike DeHelig and Planner Marie Williams in the studio with us discussing the general plan update that will be before the County Council tomorrow morning at 10:30 in the Veterans.
8:30.
I mean, God, why am I saying that? Thank you. Oh, excuse me. 8:30. Thank you. 8:30. Wow. in the War Memorial Convention Hall. So one of the reasons why I ask is that, like, I tend to be floating a lot of these topics that there is challenges on.
Right.
And so I like to try and be able to understand. So if there is a good reason that people go, oh, okay, I get it. Like, I like form-based code. That's a new way of doing the zoning, but that means, like, in these town centers.
Right.
That people can, you know, cut hair at their home or, you know, have these little home-based businesses. Is that correct?
Yeah, and one of the great things about form-based code is, and first of all, for those who aren't familiar with form-based code, it's basically a tool, a zoning tool that we use, and it's kind of being used more often throughout the U.S. now, and here in Hawaii, other counties are starting to look at it and realize its effectiveness too. But what the process of creating a form-based code, at least how we've been dealing with form-based code, is using it to implement a vision through the community plan process. And
people who don't know words like this, who aren't planners, that means if people come to the community and you're explaining, you're laying it out how people can look at it, right?
Yeah, and I wouldn't blame people for not being familiar with the phrase community plan, because so many of our community plans are quite old and have not been updated as perhaps they should have been in the past. But recently we did update the Lihue community plan and the South Kauai community plan. And what we found through that process is that, at least through the South Kauai process, that people who live in Koloa, for example, were adamant that, you know, the development that occurs here should be different from how development looks any place else. And what we realized is that by having a kind of a blanket zoning code all across our island maybe wasn't the best way for obtaining that outcome that people wanted to see. And then we brought in consultants that specialized in form-based code to help us create what that code, that zoning code unique to Koloa, could look like.
And so what I've noticed when I've traveled, not that I've traveled the world, but I've gone somewhat, right? Like you go to Thailand, you go to Sicily or Peru. What is sort of normal in many places is people live where they work. And in the centers of town, you can walk to work, you walk to school. Everything is kind of tight together, and you don't need to have a car. And I think in the last 30 years, especially the last, since the hurricane, we have shifted so many features, like one airport and just the courthouse is in Lihue, where there used to be courthouses all over the place. There were movie theaters in different places, so everybody's got to drive to town. This is trying to re-bring things back to locations, correct?
Yeah, we're acknowledging that we really have to strengthen our towns and also try to meet our housing needs as much as possible within our towns, within our existing built footprint as well, rather than sprawling outward and consuming more open and agricultural land. We're really hoping to reverse that trend
and
be more efficient and have these towns that you people want to, something we say a lot is, you know, a place where people want to live, work, play.
Yes.
And all in one place.
Hopefully less cost. Because, like, if you have to, you can only have your business in an industrial area or a commercial area. You're going to pay premium rent for your small little business that you could do out of your house instead of having to do both. Now, obviously, as it goes out further into the neighborhoods, some areas would just be houses. But right in that dense center area, people can work and live in the same place.
Yeah, we really need to get to the point where our town centers are truly vibrant mixed-use areas and that are filled with activity and for the parks and civic places and the streetscape and the streets all work together to create that environment that people want to be a part of.
I'm pulling you back to the water question.
Yeah.
So when I see this 47% growth in Lihue, and you just guys had this big Rice Street party last weekend,
yeah.
And I know that there's been a lot of effort to get Lihue to get excited about and participate in the Lihue Town Plan. Is the reason to concentrate in Lihue, even if that some might mean taking some water from Wailua, is because there's the hospital there, the airport there, and less vulnerability from tidal wave knocking out the Wailua Bridge? I mean, why put it there instead of in Wailua?
Jobs.
It's part of the jobs element. It's what we notice as the availability of
work
and also where the land is. You know, I will freely admit that there is some concern concerning, you know, where and who owns all that land that is, you know, around that area. But
yeah. But
you know, in terms of, you know, trying to look at it from a standpoint of, again, our public consultation process, the number one comment we got from the public was traffic. And, you know, when we look at quality of life, sitting in a car 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour in the mm-hmm. afternoon, you know, shrinks a person's day to 22 hours. And that's why we, in looking at our land use pattern and looking at, again, at these other competing issues with the availability of infrastructure, you know, where our services are, that it made a lot of sense for us to say, okay, we need to do what we can to not exacerbate the traffic situation along that corridor. We actually had a 20th policy. I don't know if you...
Because there's 19 policies.
There's 19. And so there was actually 20 policies, and there was actually one policy that was very clear that said address Wailua and Kapaa traffic. But, you know, throughout our community process with the Planning Commission, there were many individuals across the island that said, you know what, we need to have that addressed across the whole island, not just within that one corridor.
Mm-hmm.
So that 20th policy was actually merged with another one that talks about you know, looking at our balanced transportation system,
which is policy number 7, build a balanced transportation system on page 41, reduce congestion conditions through strategic infrastructure improvements and increase multimodal transportation options.
Right.
So in a bit, I'm sure we'll get some of these, like, a little bit more heated questions that are there.
Well, I'm sure they're out there.
I'm sure they're out there. So when we're looking at what you were just bringing up, I'm pulling my book apart already. Okay, gosh, I forgot my question. Go ahead.
Well, I guess, yeah, it's essentially then the trickle-down analysis for us from a land use pattern standpoint is, do we want to be encouraging sprawl across the whole island, or do we look at, again, tighter, taller development? You know, where water comes into play with something like this is, let's say we promote development where everybody has an 8,000 square foot yard with one house on it, with 4 bedrooms, 3.5 baths, that is $800,000.
Right. It's pricing everybody out.
You're pricing everybody out, and then on top of that, you're encouraging high levels of, you know, water consumption. I mean, whereas when you're looking at trying to keep our kids home, and you provide them those ladders of opportunity from a housing standpoint, by having integrated mixed-use product and at the same time providing great places for people to congregate as if it's their you know, their living room or their front yard, that these shared spaces supplant this need for sprawl. And that's where we see the form-based code that you bring up as a means of creating, again, that balance of great community places, great community energy, and at the same time providing for ladders of opportunity by diversifying our housing product.
Well, Mike DeHillig, chair of the planning department, director of the planning department, I had somebody ask again, who am I talking to? I remember what I was going to say.
Okay.
And what I notice is the haves are worried about the traffic, and the have-nots are worried about the housing.
Yeah.
And then my other observation from when I go to all these meetings is it's mostly the haves who have the time to go to the meetings. And so with all kinds of love and respect to you guys and the heart-centered way of putting that in there. I think that it doesn't probably really address the have-nots well enough. So something that I know that I will be working with some people who have yet to ever have come testify in this other process is that we're going to be looking at the social equity parts. And what I think that you've done a really good job at is being able to notice that the population is being replaced. Young people can't afford to be here. They're tending to leave.
Right.
Seniors are coming here in retirement. Baby boomers who've had successful lives are coming. So we're having an aging median age group, but we're replacing our population. What it doesn't work strongly on, in my opinion, is looking at is that makes it sound like people are, you know, moving to Las Vegas or, you know, Washington State or wherever we're going to see a whole bunch of people there. But what I have a lot of viewpoint on and I see regularly is the despair, the drug abuse. We had 8 suicides in 3 months of young local men. I won't say how, but they all chose the same exit. I tend to be in court a lot with what I would want to say political crimes. That means they have a Nation of Hawaii driver's license, or, you know, they're standing in front of a bulldozer that's going to be digging up the EV or something like that,
right.
The bones to put in a septic system, something of that nature. But I go to court and I just see a parade of people. I would say it seems like 60% part Hawaiian or Hawaiian, and they're mostly poverty crimes. They maybe didn't show up when they were supposed to be showing up, something that a number of us will be bringing. And this is because I've had this request. It brought it to my attention. So we have a lot of the numbers on our incarceration rates and how we have people who are displaced. So I'm sure you guys will be fine with it, but that's something that I think that we need to really put in there. While that's a lot of that is state, it is still, it's not just that our kids are going off to college and never coming back. They're going off to Saguaro Correctional Facility in Eloy or, you know, going to Halava. And it also happens that we have the lowest rate of crime since 1975 when they didn't even have beds in the prison. And so we are having a whole industry of incarcerating people. So we need to be able to be looking at that. I feel like I haven't heard enough commentary on the shared spaces issues.
Okay.
And what I did a couple weeks ago is I went and spent some time in the most respectful way. It was fun to go do it, but with some friends that are without housing, houseless people. And so I got to have the experience of needing to move from one public place to another public place to another public place as we're getting ushed out, right?
Right.
And in the case of person I was with, you know, Hawaiian, huge cultural practitioner, whole family, you know, they're saying they got bad genes or something because they all got illnesses at, you know, 30 years old, but guess what? They were sprayers, you know, in their teenage years for sugar. And so, you know, maybe these degenerative diseases have something to do with toxins. But I got told story after story as we look at different parks where the trees have been cut down to keep the houseless out of the park. So it damages the parks. And I got to know what it feels like to be a lawbreaker just for sleeping. And just, you know, where do you go? And if you have a disabling illness, there's no place for you. And these are people with, you know, pre-contact deep histories. And I feel like this is something that we really, really need to address. And it's not just in the social equity part, but like, how do we create encampments, like
safe spaces
for people? And when I look at what is going on with the protectors, like at Wailua and Wainiha, where they're looking at their vahipana and then actually moving on top of them, they end up being points of spiritual rehabilitation. And I'm using that word quoting the people who are there. And so generations that are older than the protectors, or the emerging generation who have maybe even been suicidal or have had, you know, there's historic trauma that's gone on. And that what we're seeing is people become inspired and empowered. We saw that at Standing Rock. No more suicides, no more crime. We see that at Mauna Kea. People get inspired and they have, you know, so how do we create places where we can do what I would think like community housing, where it's a central kitchen and living room with, you know, a spiral of like bedrooms coming out, but that the people can kind of live together and then be within building codes. I know that's the building department, but I felt that this plan hasn't done enough to direct that, where people can work. That would certainly work on the diversified farms. You guys have heard me testify multiple times, and I feel like that was an issue that didn't really get addressed in there, is like, how do we grow sustainable farms with diversified food? You have to live near your food, and it takes a lot of people to do it. And right. Couples, like, I know like four couples will all buy in on one piece of land, young couples, and they're happy to kind of live close together. We have to kind of figure those sort of things out.
Right. It's, you know, housing is a challenge. And, you know, when we started looking at the base numbers, what we are aware of is this island needs to figure out how to produce or stand up approximately 9,000 housing units by the year 2035. And that's already on top of the deficit we already have. Relying on the government to do it in as what we've traditionally done, which is these, you know, affordable housing exactions, or these percentage of housing that have to be developed as part of a broader development. At the current rate, if we were to do that, I mean, we would have to have, you know, close to 30,000 market homes actually developed to make 9,000, you know, I guess not affordable, but workforce or housing for local people. And so the challenge for us has been, and what the plan recommends, is that this has to be a multi-prong approach. So things like, some things, we have to look at what our demands for housing are in our agricultural sector. So how do we provide that balance between too much regulation, because we've had people abuse our ag housing laws before.
Sure.
How do we loosen that while keeping the cost of housing, you know, at a level where we can produce our own food and not have that become prohibitive for people that want to farm? We also have to look at it from a standpoint of our houseless population, right? How do we provide, again, a diversity of opportunities for them to come into or be intaked into the kind of social programs? Because, you know, it ranges from either people that don't have a job to they have, you know, mental health issues that need to be addressed,
right.
or they're homeless by choice.
And we are housing a lot of our mental health issues in the prison system.
I agree.
And, you know, what I will be presenting tomorrow is some of these numbers where we see, I think it, honestly, this can sound crazy, but at KCCC, I believe right now, there are 4 serious violent criminals in KCCC, and everybody else is somewhere less than that. And the vast majority of them are not even violent at all. And so when we look at how much cost that we put in there, and we have generational damage that goes on by making such a mechanism of basically using our prison system like a dustbin of people who either are disorganized, have mental disabilities, health disabilities, or just aren't really happy with how things are, or can't swim the financial current. That's what I feel like I for the most part watch in there. And I'm not picking on our prosecutor. I consider him a partner in this too, but We need to be looking at that. And when I look in at all this commercial space that we have standing vacant, why not do infill? Why not do micro housing in these empty shopping centers?
Or flex housing. I mean, I think these
Tell
are,
me what flex housing is. I don't know.
Like in terms of flex space, you know, when we
I don't
have
know what that means.
So in our form-based code, what we have is the flexibility for people to choose how to use their structures. So sometimes it can be used as a residential usage. Sometimes it can be used as commercial. I think, you know, the reality is we have structures that are underutilized, and how we approach being permissive about it is what I think we need to look at from a creative housing standpoint. And I think the plan looks generally at these factors of, you know, do we, can we provide a safe space for people's, you know, shelter, and that do not necessarily conform to that mold of, you know, being able to buy a home or rent a home. So, you know, that's the beauty of what something like a form-based code regime can do is provide that flexible regulatory element. So it's less from a governmental standpoint prescribing what you have to do. It's saying, you know, here's a range of things you can do, and we believe it's within a general acceptance of the community. What is key, though, and I want to emphasize at the heart of a form-based code is we do not develop one from the top down. What we do is we go out into the community and go through a very intensive community listening process first, because we want to align our regulations with what the community values are. And we recognize that each of our micro communities around the island do have very different sets of values.
And I participated in a lot of that, and I watched it, and still yet it is a pretty small subset who show up. And there are people like myself or Ken Taylor giving you a shout out, people who show up again and again and again. And I saw at the very end of the planning commission process a word called provisional ended up into this stuff, and that made a lot of people just like have a little aneurysm, because they were going, provisional, all of a sudden this goes from agriculture or, you know, whatever it is, or something moves from to resort, or everything's moving around, it goes provisional. And so what happens is the people who are able to get that provisional treatment were large landowners. And honestly, I can't help but notice a number of them used to be the director of the planning department. You know, so I think, okay, you know, not surprised. But then when there are areas like the houseless, I would like to see provisional thrown in there. Like, instead of having one paragraph on housing for diversified ag, because at least I have to read it again. I've read this a number of times. I'm so glad to have my physical copy, because it's difficult on the computer to run back and forth.
Right.
So there's like one short little paragraph on agriculture housing. Well, maybe that can be provisional that the community is able to figure something else out that's good, because I don't get why, you know, the large landowners and the privileged get the provisional, and the marginalized don't have a provision in there for them.
So let me, and Marie can jump in here, but, you know, let me explain the phrase provisional just so.
Okay.
And it has more of a legal effect, mm-hmm, versus something that is a certainty.
Okay, it was a meltdown.
And so, you know, what we realize, and we're, you know, Marie and I, and from our departmental standpoint, what we're a big proponent of is regional planning and allowing people within the regions to be able to say what they want and what they don't want. Unfortunately, this process that we have, it's cost a lot of money already to get to this point, but we do not have the level of intensity that we normally would have in a community plan, like you would with South Kauai or with, mm-hmm, with, and so there were certain dead ends, I think we would say, where our department was not able to, I guess, reach a clear conclusion as to what, you know, the right question is. And so that word provisional is really meant as a stub out for the community to have that debate. So it's not a yes, it's not a no, but what it's meant to do is essentially dictate through a trickle down process with the community plan, saying, okay, look at this area and decide what do you want to do with it. You know, and I think that's our message, is more of a community empowerment message. I know it when you see it on a map, it gets a little spooky, like, oh, you know, this area is colored in, yikes, right? And I get that. And so if people have that reaction, we are going to start, let's say, for example, our West Kauai community process, in the next few months. We expect people to speak loudly about whether they agree or disagree with those areas and include them in the graphical policy or take it out. So it's really not meant as a firm policy. It's our way of being able to articulate that more discussion has to be done, because we cannot reach a conclusion in our community process that that it's one way or the other.
And how do we keep moving forward, Marshall?
So this comes back to housing, and there's something in here that I really do like. This is in the general plan update right now, that applying traditional Hawaiian concepts of resource management, such as the ahupua'a system, can help to develop and support a culture of stewardship on Kauai. I think that's beautiful in there, and I think that we are headed in that direction. And in terms of housing, there are a certain number of people that actually just need land. If you give them land and the permission to build housing, they can do that. People can build something up to code out of recycled and repurposed materials. And, you know, there are a lot of ways to provide simple, cheap housing. But people need land. People need land that they can build on and grow food on.
Yeah, and just taking it back to the plan, and, you know, my hope is that people really do download the plan or go to a library. There are hard copies at all six libraries, and I believe that you can only check them out for 2 hours at a time. But that people open the plan, read it, and really become informed. So if the desire is to strengthen a section or add actions or really take a hard look at the policy, when we have those discussions at our planning committee process, that, you know, we're prepared with the best available information we have. But housing is a sector, one of 10 really important sectors in the general plan, and there are 8 subsections, from affordable housing, infill housing, to elderly housing, which, as we just talked about, we are starting to age as an island, a demographic. Our houseless population, we actually call it houselessness in the plan, and that's been a bit of a problem because people have done a word search for homeless and haven't found it. And then the impact of resort uses on our housing inventory as well. And so there's a whole bunch of objectives and actions across our housing sector. So I really encourage people to look at that.
And I did go in and I just paid for the print cost on mine. It was $74.25. I used to be a business person. I recommend you guys have like 10 of them printed out, and people could come in and they could contribute that $74.25 and just pick it up and leave. Thank you so much for bringing mine in, because you're going to get stronger groups. This is a typical text. I've just gotten this text a little bit ago. Hawaiian have-nots on the Department of Hawaiian Homeland's wait list for Wailua are not considered in this plan update, further insulting and causing generational despair. Department of Hawaiian Homelands is proceeding ever so slowly and will build in Wailua during the life of this planning document. Why does the county continue to ignore that?
Well, when you talk about Hawaiian Homelands, I want to be clear that the county's jurisdiction to actually regulate zoning on Hawaiian Homelands is preempted by state law. So when we're dealing with zoning issues or the sort, when it comes to land use, we do not have any ability to tell the Department of Hawaiian Homelands what they can or cannot do. On a very extreme end, when you look at what has gone on in Hilo, for instance, there is a Safeway, a Target, and a Panda Express, and a Home Depot on Hawaiian Homelands.
Yeah.
That's the level of flexibility that the Department of Hawaiian Homelands has over their property. We did, as part of this process, actually do an outreach to each of the community associations through one of our consultants. And what we wanted to at least understand was the vision that each of these communities that are already established throughout our island have, as respect to, you know, what Anahola wants to see themselves as, what Kekaha sees themselves as. And what that has done as a trickle-down effect is essentially our land use pattern. So we know that there are areas that are slated within Anahola and in Hanapepe Heights and in Kekaha for future growth. Where that comes into play also is where we are going to be making those investments in infrastructure. Again, you know, we don't have a very hard choice to be able to explain, you know, to the public that we can or cannot stop housing in an area for Hawaiian Homelands. But if Homeland says, you know, we want to be able to hook up to your sewer, hook up to your water system, We should know that. And so that's where the plan reflects areas for expansion throughout the island that Hawaiian Homelands is going to be putting in. Now, what we do not have necessarily is a timetable. And I think the text that you have articulated, and it's been in the newspaper, the Star Advertiser had 2 days of articles on this, you know, concerning whether the Department of Hawaiian Homelands is actually doing what it needs to do to whittle down the wait lists of people that have been on there for generations. You know?
Yeah, it's a tough problem. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, and Jake, joining the team, is in here also. We're really happy to have Planning Director Mike DeHillig and Community Planner and Planning Person Marie Williams. Our call-in number is 826-7771. We're going to honor our underwriters, and then we will be taking your calls. And I also have texts and, you know, other calls that have come in, so we'll be looking at that. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and Edible Hawaiian Islands.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Marshall, do we have a caller?
Yes, we do.
Aloha, you're on the air. KKCR.
Hey, Felicia. Thank you, Felicia. Thanks for taking my call. I was curious about the idea of traffic. And one of the ideas that I've always maintained is that there's a great way to relieve the traffic, Mike, and is it Maria or Marie?
Marie.
Is to build a bypass road from Upper Aglots to Princeville, following the Power Line Trail to Knudsen's Gap, which is basically the entrance to the tree tunnel, and then spoke down to Lihue, Puhi, Wailo Homestead, Honolulu, and so on, Kilauea. And in doing so, by building a two-lane highway, it would allow the easement of traffic to go across the island, because we're the only island that has no road around it or across it, and we're in desperate need of doing it. I feel it'd be a lot better idea than trying to tear up the highway along 56.
So I'm gonna let them take that, and I know it's come up a number of times in the past, but I'm gonna let them take that. So thank you so much, and they'll answer that now. Mahalo.
Yeah, it's an idea that has been raised several times, and it definitely sounds like a great way to alleviate our traffic. But the issue is that doing a brand new highway like that right through the middle of our island, through a very sensitive place. Well, first of all, the costs would be extremely high, and then we have to think of the environmental impacts as well. But I want to go back to our existing general plan. The existing general plan is in place right now. It is our law, and it was last updated in the year 2000. And basically, it acknowledged that back then we did have a traffic problem as well. And kind of the big solution it presented was the creation of a new relief route, known as the Kapa'a Permanent Relief Route. And this was basically a new highway that would run parallel to our existing highway and go off of the what is now known as the temporary bypass, of course, that we all use, and be that major infrastructure project that would solve the traffic problem. And as we all know, that project has not really moved forward, and it's unlikely it will move forward. Unfortunately, what happened is the State Department of Transportation that would really be the ones undertaking a project as huge as a new highway. They have done some preliminary environmental work, and through that process, they've realized that the cost of getting it across the Wailua Stream and onto sensitive lands would be upwards of $600 million, and it just didn't seem like a feasible project. And so in terms of traffic, what we're looking at now are a series of smaller projects identified through the Kapa'a Transportation Solutions Plan. This was kind of a short to midterm plan that the state DOT and the county undertook several years ago, and really trying to figure out, are there more realistic, cheaper projects that we could implement now?
Right. Yeah, and that seems to have gone well. We have a couple of callers.
We do, but we've got a backlog of comments and questions.
Okay.
I know some listeners are waiting.
Okay.
One is that a caller said that in Lihue there was chlorine in the water and that his papayas did fine, but his pumpkins got burned. Now, I told him that was probably not that you or your kuleana. Do you know anything about chlorine in the water in Lihue?
Well, here's what I am aware of, that, you know, under safe drinking water standards, certain treatments under federal law have to require some usage of chlorine. But if he's talking about it from a standpoint of, agricultural use, we do not control all the agricultural ditches, across that area that he may be living in. So, you know, the Grow Farm Company, has systems. Knudsen has systems as well. And whether or not there is, chlorine in those treatments of their water, or if they're supposed to be, I do not know. But all I can articulate to is that I am aware that as part of the safe water drinking standards, there has to be some treatment of the water to ensure that it's safe to drink.
Okay, another listener. Thank you for that. Yeah. Another listener, when we were talking about home businesses, mentioned that right now the county makes it really difficult, that this is according to him, to do home businesses in residential or agricultural areas. Is that the case? Or how is there any plan around that to change that? Or
I think that's where, again, the notion of mixed usage is a way for us to find that balance between people that want to be a part-time entrepreneur and launch into a business endeavor without having, the high amount of upfront startup costs that are typically associated with, trying to do a small business. I mean, it's a reality that America relies on small business. Small business is the cornerstone of our economy. And the ability for people to find their own way and apply their passion and make money off of it is something that we should be encouraging. So I freely recognize that our current code, which is a very antiquated type of code, is very strict when it comes to looking at cottage industry or things that people want to do within their home to do a side business or whatever not. And I think our response is that we recognize that the community wants more flexibility. And so the structure of this integrated mixed use planning is a way for us to find the happy medium.
Great, thank you. I've got one more. Do you want to take this caller first?
Let's take a caller and then we'll do. Okay, Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Sid, it's Matt.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, how's it? This is Matt.
Hi, Matt.
How's it, Matt?
Hey, how's it going, you guys? I was just listening, and great, great radio show, very informative. You know, it's good to see you getting out in the public and interacting with everybody in the hot seat, so to speak. But I it's funny because as I was listening to the show, Felicia made a comment that really made me think about what I was actually going to talk about. And she had put in one comment stating how much love she feels when she reads the document. And it's funny because I actually got that too. But I viewed it differently. For example, solid waste. I don't think solid waste should be mentioned as well as it was. I think the realities of some of the serious problems we're facing our infrastructure, solid waste being one of them, should be more realistic. because in the 2000 general plan, businesses were attracted here. And as you guys sit here and talk about flexibility of small businesses and whatnot, the business I work for has gotten on cease and desist order, which the business was based on the language of the 2000 general plan. And so when you guys put languages in there, like I saw you guys was talking about a relaxation place and whatnot on ag land and lodging, right? If they're not producing 51% of their income from agriculture, they're not allowed to put on lodging or any other business from what I've learned from what the processes of the last couple of years I've been involved in. So I would like to see a little bit more reality check on this thing. You know, I'll testify tomorrow on some of the other things. Other than that, you know, I think it's a step forward. I mean, I can see that you guys have taken our public testimony because I also participated in some of these breakout sessions that compartmentalized the process. And, you know, I know that you guys are striving to meet that consensus on all sides. But, you know, even with the housing thing, I don't think housing should get 47% in Lihue because we know that the state enrollment at the high school in Waimea is down and they're about to lose funding from the state because funding is correlated to enrollment. And so I would like to see a little bit, maybe 10% from Lihue, maybe 10% from here, there, or whatever, and add up to the west side inventory of homes. But at the same time, I do understand that we do need the houses for multiple reasons, not just the housing crisis, but we need money for the real property tax and whatnot. But that will lead to the last thing I'm going to say about the housing. We also have to have a serious discussion about where we want to go with real industry. And, you know, I love the diverse agriculture and I love all of that, but we need to really start exporting some serious containers. If it's more ag or if it's products made here, value added, whatever it is, we really have to have a sector that's focused on not just self-sustainability, but an export economy.
Thank you, Matt.
Aloha, you guys. Great
Thanks,
show.
Matt.
Aloha. We have another caller. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for this great show. Opportunity to actually speak our mind. Community planning. Well, the Hawaiian Kingdom, they're part of our community. And if you guys are going to kick the buck and say it's for the state, show a little more backbone. Put a piece of wood behind your back and your belt and stiffen up your backbone and take a little more stand for the Hawaiian people because they are community. So instead of these people coming here with big money, you know, with big taxes to pay, consider what this island was founded on and the indigenous people. So show a little respect. And stop kicking the buck. It'd be much appreciated. Thank you very much.
Okay, mahalo.
Yeah, you know, I think through the caller that just called in, it is indicative of and a characteristic of many comments that we did receive. You know, there is a desire to want to really galvanize and expand on the growth in Hawaiian identity and the integration of Hawaiian identity mm-hmm. into the way we interact since, you know, the 76 CONCON.
Constitutional Convention.
Right.
And prior to that, you couldn't even name your kid a Hawaiian name. You weren't allowed to speak the language. I mean, it was really a very overt oppression of the people. And so there is a huge improvement, but we're having a second renaissance, actually.
Right, and I agree. There's still a ways to go. I mean, I think the desire, as you've articulated with the community manifesting, it's concerned with things like 30-meter telescope and wanting to even discuss things like the Alaloa, for instance. I mean, I think it's indicative of
the Alaloa Trail, the trail around the island. Yes,
right. It's indicative.
The Highways Act.
It's indicative of what I think is not things that we ignore, but we now take seriously. And I think that paradigm shift for our department, we hope is at least being imparted on the plan that we view that as one of the four core values that we now balance as part of our the way that we think about how we interact with our community.
And I think that we're going to be seeing some surprising evolution on the land claim awards, the Kuleana lands,
yeah.
Because I've been listening to the Kia'i, the protectors of these different areas, and they're pretty sharp. And they're showing me legal grounds and different pieces on some of their arguments, and I'm learning a lot from them. And it isn't even about no treaty of annexation 100 and some odd years ago. It's about today,
right.
And it is about consistent displacement and the color of law and the color of title. So I think that those pieces are going to be coming out a little bit more. You had another call that you had some on your list that somebody had a point.
Right. But do we still have a caller? Caller,
are
you still there?
Do we have a caller? No.
Okay. Yes, another listener wanted to ask regarding the South Shore plan in the Pu'ipu Gateway area, the workforce housing planned for there. Do you know when that's supposed to occur?
Well, first of all, yes, the caller is referring to what is the future land use map for the South Kauai area, and it does try to, you know, support capturing new growth in a place adjacent to Pu'ipu, which is really where all the jobs are in the district, and that would be an area not where we would not allow transient or resort use to occur, but we would require them to do, you know, some affordable, some workforce homes, but really it'd be geared to the people who live and work, the long-term residents of the area. It's in the plan, it's on the map. What typically has to happen next, it is somewhat reliant on the private realm and where the landowner or developers, how they choose to initiate the process. We have a kind of a state top-down planning system that we're working with, where the state controls has four very broad land use districts: urban, agriculture, rural, and the conservation district. And to
that's
change
called natural now. You've changed open to natural.
Yeah, we do describe it as that in our general plan. But basically, to change from one district to another district, you do have to go through quite an intensive process with the state land use commission, and they have not started that process. The landowner.
And when we're talking about the South Shore plan, burning question that's been on show after show after show is the proposal for the dairy at Maha'ulipu. And, you know, in all fairness, I have invited the dairy on. I invited him on three shows, and I got a last-minute cancel. It's kind of like third strike, you're out. You know, like it's hard for me if somebody doesn't show up and I get a cancellation an hour before they show. I have the other people are really anxious to come on. I appreciate it. That Marie, you asked to come on. And when people ask to come on, I'm delighted to bring people on. So I like that the government is really reaching out and wanting to be talking to the people. What's the deal with that? Because, and in alignment with the 30-meter telescope, it's the same group. Group 70, what we saw with the 30-meter telescope, they didn't even make an attempt to uphold their responsibility. The archaeologist wasn't even willing to attempt to pronounce some Hawaiian words. I'm like, gosh, the guy isn't even curious. What we've seen with what Group 70 did there in, and I've gone to the court cases, I look at all this stuff, I've been following it tightly because the people from that side, the Friends of Mahalapu, are very active in getting my attention on it. How come that's not in the plan? Because to me, that is a huge issue because we can contaminate that aquifer. And when I look at it, not to be cold, but it's at least 25% of our revenue for the island. And I care about everybody down there. I don't mean to be cheap by saying, hey, you know, you're going to kill the goose that lays the golden egg. How come that was avoided in this plan?
You know, at the end of the day, the document is a land use plan. I mean, as much as it has all the uses and all the dreams and hopes and desires, you know, articulated in the plan, What the plan is at its core is how land is used. And as you look at how we've discussed a lot of agricultural questions, you know, this afternoon, and it's continued throughout, you know, much of our discourse over many, many years, people are not satisfied with how agricultural uses are defined, how they are integrated or separated, and how you define, you know, what it essentially is ag. You know, we're very cognizant of the debate that went on with, you know, Bill 2491.
Yeah.
And it's not to pass judgment on whether, you know, one definition is right or the other. I think what we try to articulate in the plan more so is that we want to preserve areas for ag. And I think that really is the question, because we, as Marie mentioned, we have a dual jurisdiction situation where, you know, our state laws also have a play in terms of how we define agriculture. So in as much as we think we have a full unfettered, you know, palate in terms of being able to prescribe what can or cannot be on agriculture, we are limited, and in what's going on with the litigation and all those types of things, that definition is still in play. So I think for us, we're not addressing the dairy question per se, but I think we are more so articulating the concerns that we have where you are seeing the human the human element of civilization actually interacting with some of these things that are noxious. You know, what's going on also with the water and the contamination issues is that's exactly why you have Department of Health going through this process of public notification, public hearings, requiring an environmental impact statement, and these types of things. And so this disclosure and discourse is part of the process. It's healthy.
Well, I think unquestionably dairy is agriculture. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. But when we're looking at toxicity or, you know, I mean, I would think it would at least be written down on there that is a piece that's under discussion. Because when I said the plan seems so polite, like I reread the Kekaha Waimea area, and, you know, another thing that I work with a whole lot on this show, and I go out there. Like, one thing for KKCR, we go out there. We don't really try and... We work hard to not propagate disinformation. I have the poison sheets from what's called Poison Valley, Ava Valley, that's out there. There is nothing in the plan that recognizes that there is legacy chemicals that are there. I have people send me their water test results from Anahola, Moloa'a. Those wells are contaminated. Probably the city wells are, the county wells are contaminated. It seems to me, you know, how deep is the contamination? More than people want to be drinking out of. One of these people, they just spent $12,000 to try and scrub the TCBs out of the water from the well they just had done. They had it retested. It only got 20% out, right? So it seems like when we are dealing with challenges like water contamination, I had David Craddock on the show before. He was the last water guy. And when they were wanting to do the horizontal drill, they had a number of reasons. And I know that it was not wanted for cultural reasons, but among them was some water contamination in the Lihue wells. And I've had people who used to be the pipe man or the diggers, and we learn about what's it called when you injection wells, and that there's injection wells. And so these aren't the planner's fault. It's not the people right now's fault. We're having this all over the planet. We have a generation or two ago's challenge, but why aren't those contaminant areas outlined in there? It seems to me like when we have a planning document that we would be saying, well, this is where we're at. We've got a landfill. We've got, you know, old legacy chemicals. We have this and this and this. How are we going to deal with it?
Yeah, I will say that agriculture is a subsection under the economy sector in Chapter 3. And it's actually one of our longest, I think it is our longest subsection. And The focus is definitely on, you know, small, we do try to call out small farms and acknowledge that there's this desire for more locally grown food and food hubs and moving towards, you know, what we're seeing here in the, on the North Shore with, community gardens and people being able to, you know, produce
work together.
Food. Uh-huh. Yeah. And, in terms of, and then water is addressed in our watershed sector, and our hope is that through the planning committee process, that things that the plan, you know, that perhaps were overlooked or not addressed strongly enough, that we can work on that. And in terms of the environmental health aspect of what you're talking about, it maybe it is something that we need to focus on and see if we can strengthen in this document.
Because I think when we look back at the past document, when we're able to see, because I was a part of the last effort, and that was right after the hurricane, so we weren't even really thinking then about beach access, mountain access. A lot of things weren't a worry back then. A worry now is definitely the legacy chemicals. And, you know, I'm not even, I'm being polite, and I'm not touching on the present chemicals. What we can see is the next generation of chemicals are arguably have a much shorter half-life. That's been exhaustively talked about. It doesn't mean it's any less pertinent to some people. Marshall, yes?
Felicia, the calls and questions have been coming in furiously.
Okay, go ahead.
I have a couple
so
callers.
So let me say this quick. You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. With Felicia and Marshall and Jake, Kauai Soapbox, we have County Planning Director Mike DeHeelig and Marie Williams in here, 8:30 tomorrow morning at the Convention Center in Lihue. The County Council is going to be talking about the general plan update, and these guys are giving us information. Okay, go.
Okay, caller question. Is there a plan for post-hurricane trash cleanup? He said that in the last hurricane, the situation was very toxic, and he also suggested that maybe non-toxic building materials would be appropriate for the island. Comments there?
Yeah, hazards is included in Chapter 3, where we address it. It's actually an entire sector that looks at hazards and how we can be a more resilient place and also start to adapt to climate change as well, to the impacts of climate change, not only sea level rise, but we might have more extreme heat events and the impacts of hazards we already have, such as a hurricane, for example, that storm surge will be, you know, the impact of that will be even more with sea level rise as well. And we really did work with our county's civil defense department. They did change their name recently.
Emergency management agency.
Yeah, and they have an updated plan, and we did incorporate a lot of that language into our sector, but at the same time thinking about the future and, you know, with sea level rise and climate change, if that trend, you know, does continue, and it will, what will the impacts be to us as well? So I would encourage people to read that sector of the general plan.
Yeah. Is it possible that trash disposal post-hurricane specifically would be more in the realm of a Kauai Emergency Management Agency, part of their plan?
Yeah, it's with them. And, you know, and we're very aware of, you know, the fact that when after the hurricane, you know, Haleakala landfill, which is now closed, you know, really filled up very quickly. And so, you know, I know that solid waste does have, you know, these types of experience, you know, institutional knowledge when it comes to, okay, what can we learn from these situations? And so, you know, emergency management as well as solid waste, you know, I have probably worked together to try to, you know, learn from the past and some of the issues that arose after 92.
Related to that is wastewater treatment relative to hurricane or storm surge. Lydgate Park is a little bit exhausted. The DHHL lands is considered for being an upgrade for a pump station and Hokua Place's sewage. Obviously, I'm reading somebody's question. It says sewage should not be pumped down to the tsunami zone and across the river. Wastewater reclamation plants should be considered in locations where the water can be utilized, not pumped out into the ocean. Any thoughts on that?
To say that the sewage treatment plant is not in a precarious place is would be, you know, would not be true. I mean, I think we all recognize that it's within a tsunami zone, mm-hmm. And at the same time, we do have this need to essentially be more advanced in how we're treating our sewage instead of just injecting things into the ground. A lot of these infrastructure questions as we move forward are going to have to be balanced with, you know, like, again, the competing needs for housing, whether it's more expensive to actually stand up a new sewage treatment plant that is inland versus expanding the existing one for a certain amount of cost. And I think that's where some of the implementation questions, there's been a lot of, questions concerning, you know, how is this plan going to be implemented? What the plan does not pass essentially is a value judgment on what tends to be the prerogative of our lawmakers through the appropriations process and weighing the competing needs versus how you can pay for them. Trying to stand up a new sewage treatment plant is pretty much going to, you know, require very huge debt outlay by the county, and we have to ask ourselves, can we or can we not afford it? If we require the developer to build a sewage treatment plant on their own, it could essentially build million-dollar homes, which may not be something that we want either. So.
Right.
Well, we can tell there's intense listener interest in this subject, Felicia. This is great. The lines are full. Thank you for your patience, callers. And
826-7771.
Yeah. So, Rupert, the po'o at the Heiau'an Po'ipu, wanted me to ask several questions, and then he's on the line and would like to come on the air after asking them. So, I scratched it down. All right, I'll start with one I can read. Is the dump at Kalepa on Hawaiian homelands? And why give this general plan 2 decades when previous ones have had just a decade? And is the draining place for Po'ipu... Is actually the Heiau'an Po'ipu becoming the basin for drainage in that area, I think, is the essence of the question. I may not understand quite right.
Should I put him on the air?
He wanted me to ask the questions first.
Okay.
Well, maybe I can speak to the timeline aspect first, and I totally do not blame anyone for being confused about how, you know, the timeline for how we update these long-range plans. I will say that typically what we do is we think long range when we develop a plan, and we therefore use a planning horizon of about 20 years. But in reality, these plans are meant to not be a 20-year plan per se. We're supposed to update them at least every 10 years and really kind of do a hard look at the plan every 5 years. That has not always occurred. And as a result, we've taken more like 20 to 15 years to update our long-range plans, but we are hoping that with the update of this plan, we can get into a system where the plan really becomes more like a living plan and a lot more responsive, especially given that we're living in an age of great change, and we need to be able to ensure that our plans can reflect that and be proactive.
Okay, and then is the Kalepa landfill site on Hawaiian homelands?
It's not on Hawaiian Yes, not on our understanding. It's not on Hawaiian homelands, but it is on state and private lands.
There's a little tiny piece, I think, that's on. Maybe it's the MRF or something.
Yeah.
I remember I sit in all these meetings, so I know there's a little piece, but
yeah.
I think it's Grove Farm, right?
Yep. So that's the portion that's on private land.
Yeah.
Okay. And then as far as the drainage in Po'ipu, so I'm not familiar with the actual drainage there, but the question is the basin going to be the Heiau at this point?
You know, this is something that in many consultations prior, both at Planning Commission and also at the council, you know, Uncle Rupert has brought up this concern regarding whether the drainage in that area has a master plan. I think when you look throughout the document, what we're very clear on, especially when it comes to, you know, our watershed management, what we do not want is situations that create, this type of runoff flooding, and that's very clear. We you know that essentially promotes siltation of our shorelines, so on and so forth. So if there's any development that is Mauka of that area, we expect it to align with, you know, proper engineering standards to ensure that it's detaining the water, not increasing the flow in that area, and then also transmitting and transporting pollutants and also, you know, particulates that can essentially harm our sacred places, like where Uncle Rupert, you know, has dedicated a lot of his time.
Done an amazing job.
There's no place like that.
Uncle Billy.
Yeah, you look across the state, and when you look at how a community has risen up like that, there's definitely a lot of respect that has to go into the work that he's done.
It's impressive. I'm going to bring him on. Uncle Rupert, you know, I don't have enough expertise to be asking the follow-up question. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, you're on the air.
Okay, the reason I asked this question on the AO, I testified in front of the Land Use Commission, and he demanded the Knutson Trust come up with a drainage plan. Okay? Now, here comes Grow Farm with their development. I want to see their drainage plan. That's why the State Land Use Commission denied the application from rezoning their property because there was no drainage plan. And I still believe there's no drainage plan. A lot of Hawaiians call it a lot of wah. Okay, the second one is every property or all the rubbish throughout Hawaii is placed on Hawaiian homelands. Do you folks know that? Every single island is placed on Hawaiian homelands. Okay, 20 years is a long time for the planning department to have a general plan update. We had 50-something years, and nothing was ever made to correct the problems that we face today. How can we look 20 years down the road and say that we're not going to have the same problems that may even be three times as worse as what we have now? But I believe the general plan should be kept on hold, and all this in
You're breaking up.
That's all.
Okay. Aloha.
Yeah, and that's definitely a challenge we face when we're developing any long-range or community plan. It's the fact that we do have many existing problems that, and people, as they rightfully should, do point to past plans that might have indicated what a solution would be, and for one reason or another, it was not done. And so there is this distrust out there that, you know, why do we even plan for the future when we might not implement past plans? And we are trying to develop an implementation program for the first time where we're a lot more clear and transparent about what we're actually doing and the partnerships we need to get things done and to see results as well, and reporting on it to the public at regular intervals as well. I think we are calling for every two years that we produce a report.
Thank you for that. We're going to take another caller, and then I want to make sure when we're done with the next caller, because nobody's called in on this, so I'm just holding space, that I really want to be talking about, after we hear the next question, this visitor arrival forecast with 0.9% growth when, you know, we've got 7% growth. So we're going to come to that after we take this call. Aloha, you're on the air.
Thank you, Felicia and Marshall. It's Andrew Saharnis.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a few comments about an enlightened plan for our county. And one is that a great degree more sensitivity is required of all the visitors and new residents from the mainland of the Hawaiian culture, the people, and their survival activities on a traditional level. And the signs on the road for the Moku and the Ahupua, that's a good first step, and the new recognition of the Hawaiian flag as well. But Hawaiians need... Haoles need to know that this is Hawaiian's land, and that there needs to be an increased access for Hawaiian cultural activities, such as the trail around the island. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is recently in the Advertiser there was a great article on the use of bicycles by the city of Utrecht in Netherlands. And they had just built a 6,000 bicycle parking garage. And it was quite a lengthy article. I actually gave Felicia a copy of it. And and all the benefits of riding bicycle. And we need to, the most destructive invention in history to the social fabric is the automobile. And the auto-centric suburban sprawl development, it's a dinosaur. It takes more maintenance than the benefits. Anyway, so we need to get more down to a local, decentralized development where we don't have to go so far for all our needs.
So thank you for calling that in, because we're kind of coming to the end of the show.
Yeah, anyway, thank you for your time, and I appreciate you guys, and also your guests. Thank you for coming on the air.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you.
So Planning Director Michael DeHielig from Kauai County and Planner Marie Williams, as we're talking about the general plan update before it goes before the County Council tomorrow at 8:30 at the Convention Hall, and people are coming in for public hearing time. Mike, Marie, okay, the 0.9%, that's just, you know, I think that's going to end up having to change. We've seen over 7% just between last year and this year. What's the story on those numbers?
Yeah, well, we did, and Mike talked a bit about this, but we definitely started our public process with kind of a technical base.
Mm-hmm.
Where we spent 2 years hiring consultants. You know, we want the professional, neutral experts in these fields.
I'm going to agree with that.
To develop the database for this. And we did hire someone to develop projections for us, including projections on our visitor arrivals and our average daily visitor count, which basically is our visitor arrivals, which is connected to the average length of stay. And then from that, you get kind of the average number of tourists that might be on Kauai any given day. And at the time, 2014, when we developed the projections, we found that they actually were aligned with what our state was projecting as well. But it's true that in the past 2-3 years since then, we have seen record growth, and that's been a major issue for some people. And it has raised the question to us, well, do we have to take another look at our long-range forecast given the, you know, 3 recent years of data, but at the same time thinking that this is a long-range forecast. And when it comes to visitor arrivals, it is a number that does go up and down. It's not going to follow a linear trend line.
Right. And yeah. I worked in retail, and yes, and it's unbelievable, especially in hot spots like Hanalei. I was at Lauai Beach Resort, and there was probably 100 people out there taking pictures of the birds, which is nice, but, you know, I mean, it was like pretty overwhelming. We have another caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello? Hi.
Hi. A quick question.
Can you speak into your phone more directly? You're very quiet.
I am speaking into my phone.
Okay. Quick question.
Quick question. I don't know if this has been addressed. It's about affordable housing. The tiny home that was just dedicated in the Anahola area, in their market there, has a 480 square foot home, and it has a full kitchen, which is great. It's fabulous that is being allowed. However, any home that is now considered a guest house at 500 square feet is not allowed to have a full kitchen with full cooking privileges. I want to ask the reason why, and what would it take to allow a current guest house of 500 square feet to have a permanent kitchen? This would allow people to cook their own meals that rent these or live in these buildings rather than having to try to purchase them, online or out on the retail, which is a very expensive way to eat. And that is just, you know, contrary to trying to make things affordable here for people. So that's my question.
Thank you. When
and what is the process for to allow 500 square feet guest houses that are legal here to have a full kitchen?
Thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, the caller is put it, articulated it very clearly in terms of, you know, that weird tension within our county law that allows for a 500-square-foot guest house but does not provide for a kitchen. You know, these laws that define our density over, you know, the past, since the 1970s, have always hinged on that density count relying on whether or not there is or is not a kitchen. And so, you know, it wasn't a decision that I think, you know, I wasn't even alive in the 70s when
right.
that decision was made, but that is where that comes from. That being said, given, you know, what our current housing paradigm is and what we need to get people, you know, in homes, I think is a relevant conversation that we're already having with our county lawmakers in terms of how to diversify the housing product. What has happened over time is that because of the ADU law, people are choosing to build the bigger home with the kitchen versus build the guest house. But what you do when you build the bigger home, you can CPR it off, sell it off, and it goes on the market, you know, between the $600,000 to $800,000, you know, a pop. So it becomes less of what was it, the intended consequence behind the ADU, which was to try to provide more housing.
And that's additional dwelling unit and condominiumized property regime.
Right. Sorry. And I think that's been where we're looking at things like the ARU bill that has been before.
Additional rental unit.
I should say these things out.
people don't know.
Yeah, the additional rental unit bill that has been discussing. And we're actually going to be hearing a bill that Councilman Chalk and Brune have put forth and sent to the Planning Commission in the next couple months that looks at an expanded additional rental unit bill across the island. Again, the balancing tension is we do not want to have houses that are developed within our residential areas that are just going to be resold for market speculation.
Right, or to be vacation rentals. So we have two public service announcements really quick, and then we'll take another call or two that are sitting there holding, and then we'll have a few rounds of kind of final thoughts because we're getting towards the end of the hour, and Jazz with John will be coming up. So CERT, Community Emergency Response Team, really lines up with what we were talking about earlier. Very important.
The Kauai Fire Department is currently providing free training to all island residents that are interested in becoming a Community Emergency Response Team member. The CERT program trains residents to become self-reliant in the event of natural disasters such as tsunamis, hurricanes, and flooding. The next 24-hour CERT training starts on October 4th at St. Catherine's School in Kapa'a. For more information, go to kauai.gov/CERT. Again, kauai.gov/CERT.
Take three. Hey, noa no kaumua li'i ho'olaula'a on Saturday, October 7th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Old Waimea Sugar Mill. Honoring Kauai's beloved king, festivities include performances by Kauai Hula Halau, music, make it and take it handcrafting with kupuna, and an award ceremony for student art contests on Kaumua Li'i as a youth. Local food, snacks, and crafts available for purchase. More information at kauaikingkaumualii.org, or if you can't spell that, call 808-652-0021.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. Hey, Mike DeHelig, Planning Commissioner. Director. Golly, look at me. Planning Director, thank you. You're going to be at the Kilauea Neighborhood Association meeting tonight, too, correct?
Yeah, I got invited by the board up there to discuss some kind of regional relevant items concerning what's going on with the access road, the new shopping center that's coming up over there. So.
Great. And Marie, you and your kids are going home, right?
Oh, yeah.
So Thank you for being there, 7 o'clock at the Kilauea Neighborhood Association. Marshall?
Felicia, we've got a couple of callers.
They need to be quick. Very
and
quick.
There's also a question that has been waiting for a while. What is the zoning for tree houses?
Wow.
I don't think there is one.
I would need more information on that because, you know, as you see from, Home and Garden TV, they have these tree houses you can actually operate as a home, you know.
Yeah.
It goes back to that question of density. So at least for our department's perspective, if they don't have any density on the property and they want to design their home that way, that's fine. If it has a kitchen, that's fine, but they're still going to need to meet the health and safety standards that all the other county departments do impose, including the fire department. So, I would love to live in a treehouse. I think it's pretty cool, actually.
You know, I used
have.
To. Yeah,
oh,
really? yeah. As in a mango tree.
Oh, really?
It'd be beautiful. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
I get jealous when I see those shows on HGTV and, you know, how creative they can make those buildings.
So, do we have a couple calls? Because we're going to have to take them fast. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Felicia. Thanks a lot for the show.
You're welcome. Okay, you got to be quick.
Okay. Due to the fact that China is a very large economy and it's growing, and they have, in fact, outlawed their gasoline-powered cars in 2 years,
really?
I'm wondering how this is going to play into your projections about, like, car usage on the island, and are we going to always lag behind? Or are we going to take the lead and be an example for the world to follow on using electric cars and sustainable electricity here on the island, including the methane from the dump, and converting that to an asset for the people instead of it being a corporatization thing?
So, okay, so he's got some policy questions.
Okay,
so answer that quickly. I got one more caller.
Yeah, I would refer you to the section of the plan that deals with how we can have a more sustainable energy system, not just through, you know, our typical energy use with KIUC, but how we change how we live and, you know, and our transportation system as well. That's all embodied in that section, and there are actions related to that.
Okay, very quick call. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, this is Nehana Vaughn, and I just wanted to thank Mike and Marie for all your work on the plan. You've put in so much time on this. And my question was if you could talk a little bit about the handling of old resort designations stemming from the 80s, particularly the Principal Plateau, and about that issue. Okay. That's something that people may want to comment on tomorrow when they come out to comment on different aspects of the plan.
No doubt. I think they're going to be wearing green T-shirts.
And you know, Mihana, we've talked about this before, and I think we freely understand the perspective that many share with you concerning these resort developments that have been on the books for many, many years and have not been acted upon. I think for us, we recognize that it's an outstanding liability when it comes to what effect it's going to have on our infrastructure. And this, particularly the Princeville Plateau, is something that I think we have, there's still some opportunity for community discourse on it. I don't think the jury is out that what is going on out there cannot be removed out of resort designation. And I think the lawmakers tomorrow should hear that. I think there are reasons why our department initially recommended to take it out, and then as we continue through the community process, why it got put back in. And so tomorrow, I think, is an opportunity to continue to share those concerns. But I think we freely recognize that the community is concerned about resort sprawl. And with the amount of units, and it's articulated in the plan, that have already been entitled through our permitting process that have the right to build, we went after those projects that did not have the right to build. And so to try to throttle down, we do need to take areas like this off. But at the same time, there are those in the resort industry that are concerned about jobs.
And so, I'm looking at it with 3,000 entitled units, which entitled, for the listener who doesn't know, that means that they've already been said yes, even if they haven't begun to build. So as Mehana is maybe pointing out, we are overwhelmed with resort displacing the people. Thank you so much, Mehana.
Thank you all so much. You've worked really hard on this plan, and thank you, Felicia, for a good show.
Okay, you're welcome. Maybe I'll see you tomorrow at 8:30 at the convention hall, or anybody who wants to go 7 o'clock for Michael DeHillig today at the Kilauea Neighborhood Association. Marshall, do we have one more thing?
Yes, we do, Felicia. I will get that to you in just a moment.
Okay, and then so I am going to put up, we have a little piece about supporting KKCR, and we do things like this. This is all volunteer and community service, and if you appreciate it, and, you know, when we go out today saying aloha to our Tom Petty, we have some people keep leaving us that have given us money. So this is a little bit about how you do a Wave Rider promo.
KKCR's Wave Rider program will make a huge splash during our upcoming fall fund drive starting on November 2nd. For a tax-deductible donation of just $175, a brief message about your business or event will surf the airwaves during every two-hour program throughout our 14-day fundraiser. That's over 100 announcements. This is a great opportunity to promote your business or upcoming event and support Kauai Community Radio. Wave Rider forms are available at kkcr.org or call us at 808-826-7774. Early sign-up guarantees the most airtime for your donated dollars. Reserve your spot in the lineup today.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We sure do appreciate all of our Wave Riders, our underwriters, everybody who helps us out. Jazz with John is coming up next. We are going to hear the County Council report. We're going to have just a quick aloha from our guests who we've been really stoked to have. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Felicia, and thank you all for, you know, having Marie and I here. You know, it's great to come out here and share, you know, and also listen and have more discourse. And I think more discourse is healthy. And I appreciate having this opportunity along with Marie to use this medium to communicate to our community.
And I just have to quickly say that the last time I was on this show, two and a half years ago, Felicia, even back then you recognized how important the general plan was. And ever since then, you've been such an active participant in this process and always trying to bring to the forefront, you know, the voices of those that you feel don't typically come and participate in processes like this. And so thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And you both will be at the council meeting tomorrow, correct?
Bright and early.
So you're going to be hearing it, so it's more opportunity. And when people send their testimonies into council, testimony doesn't hurt to also send it to the planning department. You know, I mean, I would be copying you on mine. And we're not going to have our final Tom Petty song because we're a little bit out of time. For the caller who wanted to know about houseless emergency preparedness, I want to recognize how important that question is. Hugely important. I believe she's called it in a few different times because we cannot underestimate that. And we'll have some emergency management people to be discussing that. That is a little bit detailed for the scope of the general plan update, but it is not in terms of we need to deal with our houseless population. We have a lot. So here's our county council report. Then Jazz with John at the top of the hour. Marshall and Jake, thank you so much.
Aloha, Felicia. Thank you, Mike and Marie. Thank you so much.
You.
Come back
thank
soon.
You.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Oh, I don't have you on there. Try again.
Thank you guys for coming.
Oh, I didn't
thank
come
you.
In. Jake's in there. So Jake is training a bit. Marshall's going to be going away and abandoning me, so we always have backup people. Thank you,
Felicia.
Jake.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, all right. Okay, so thank you, listeners. KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you.